Witching Hour. You will encounter eclectic topics from the realm of spirit brought into our matrix of truth. With your host, the Solaris Blue Raven, Solaris will bring you an array of unique guests covering topics from ghostly spirits to amazing anomalies, covert technology, UFOs, and shadowy global events.
And that's right here, Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, Saturdays, midnight till 2 a.m. Eastern Time. Revolution Radio, where information never sleeps.
Let the magic rise.
Oscar's freeze. That's your cerebral cortex looking for an answer it doesn't have.
See? Even your brain knows you're screwed.
Your body's filling with adrenaline right now. Whether you know it or not. Your heart's beating fast. It's getting a little harder to breathe. Your neurobiological system is telling it to run. But your knees are too weak to move.
Fear is not real. The only place that fear can exist is in our thoughts of the future. It is a product of our imagination, causing us to fear things that do not at present and may not ever exist. That is near insanity. And do not misunderstand me. Danger is very real, but fear is a choice. We are all telling ourselves a story.
Listening to Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. 100% listener supported radio. Reporting the danger. Unafraid. Right here, where information never sleeps. Revolution. Revolution. Radio.
Most are afraid of unknown depths, skirting shores thinking world flat. And with the island girls in celebration of new religion. Nobody led me or said this way. I sailed alone on makeshift raft with wind as companion. Fate for deliverance, confidence enough to assess. New disposition. Seekers of lost paradise may seem fools to those who never sought the other worlds. Welcome to Momentary Zen with Zen Garcia. Visit www.fallenangels.tv. You're listening to Revolution Radio.
Hello and welcome, everybody. And again, I thank you for joining me in a live broadcast. I'm your host, Zen Garcia. This is Momentary Zen here on Revolution Radio. I had scheduled and planned on being on with my son this evening, but he is slightly ill. And so I do ask that all of you pray for he and his family and that they are in good health and well-being. And in the meantime, I will follow and pick up this broadcast with another continuation of the reading of the Book of Navi, and that we will continue the series on the Thracian Chronicles and try to get this information to all of you anyways, which is something that I had wanted to do. The Thracian material is slowly progressing, and we are translating, thank goodness for my friends, and you know who you are out there that are dedicated yourselves and your time and your energy to doing this work for all of us, because there's so many, especially myself included, that simply just want to read the material and study it and learn, you know, what it's about, what it says, what it covers. And we've already learned from the four readings previously on the Book of Navi that the Thracian people, the children of Japheth, Yepta is what they call him, but anyways, from the line of Tiras, T-I-R-A-S, as is specified in the Table of Nations in Genesis chapter 10, that they were the post-flood kingdom, empire of nations to come into being, and that they, their reach and influence spread all the way across the, what was the, you know, the nations that surrounded the Mediterranean Sea, which it seems like a lot of the focus for that time. You know, the people that were trying to conquer the world, even as Alexander the Great, that the endeavor was to go west towards the British Isles in Scotland, and that seemed to be the extreme of, you know, that particular reach, and also to go east towards Asia, Russia, and India, and that was the furthermost reach of empire in that direction. And so we see over time in history that the peoples that conquered and ruled over other nations, that the lands that were contested were between these two portions of the world and the map of the world, and that this was what was largely known. It reminds me of the even the miniseries by the Vikings and Ragnar Lothbrok, and the background, the mythology, and the story behind him, that even during his life and times, that the Icelandic nations were limiting to only raiding towards the east. And it wasn't until he came along and really challenged the status quo and began heading west that he was able to impose his will and also to break ground and to set up his seed and his people and his bloodlines in what were the British and Francia empires, land that it was said that they were able to take over Paris at one time, and that they tried with numerous attempts to establish a foothold in Britain and were successful, according to history. And if they, you know, are trying to relate in doing the series to stay true to the timeline and to the real story of at least him as a leader of those particular peoples. Anyways, I did really like the Vikings miniseries. And I like historical accounts like that so that you can really learn. But, you know, of course, there was even said to be outreach from the Viking peoples, and that they may have successfully landed and set up colonies here in the Americas, which, you know, a lot of people attribute the discovery of America, even though it was already peopled by the native tribes and but, you know, everybody celebrates Columbus Day as the day that America was discovered, which is kind of facetious, to say the least, especially to the native peoples that were already here and spread across the lands, and that there were, according to their mythologies, that there had already been giants also living in the lands. And it was also these giant tribes and these peoples that were the fearsome enemies, the arch nemesis of the other tribes, like the ancient tribes of the Anasazi. And there are archaeologists and people that are coming up now that are trying to declare that these native people, that they were cannibals, when, in my opinion, they don't understand the influence of the giants, who most certainly were cannibals. And according to the Bible and the stories of, you know, like even the Paiute Indians, that they would abduct their people in order to eat them. And so, you know, it's my belief that it was the giant tribes that lived and were the enemies of the native peoples around the world, that in the same way that they were the arch nemesis for Israel. But they were the ones that, you know, consumed the flesh of humanity, drank the blood in ritual, would crush the bones in order to suck the marrow. And that was just part of their culture. That was part of who they were and what they did. So anyways, that's a part of the legacy of America and the world that is discounted also by mainstream science. And because the whole theme of, you know, giants being a hybrid type humanoid, hominid, and because they don't fit into the whole, you know, theory of Darwinism and evolution, it is for that reason, I believe, that, you know, there's a large cover-up in regard to them. And that the Smithsonian has been a long time, which is unfortunate because so many people have donated such cool stuff to the Smithsonian, and yet we find them to also be untrustworthy. And certainly you shouldn't let people that are liars and deceivers to be in control of the historical legacy of America and how many people have donated highly prized and valuable connections only to have them, you know, be hidden or disappeared or in some manner broken up and given to different wealthy private collectors. So it's unfortunate. But anyways, let me check the chat. Go ahead and load that up. And then we will get into the Book of Navi. Okay, be right back. Well, I am uncertain as to where the live stream is. And so I am having a hard time finding the chat. Let me try one more time. Look myself up. Usually it's right there, but all I see is the completed shows. But anyways, if I'm not able to find it, I will just, you know, just continue without taking questions from the listening audience. And so, all right, I'm going to just go ahead and bring up the Book of Navi. We'll continue the reading, and then hopefully I'll be able to find the actual show in the chat room by the next break. All right, continuing. And when he came of age, according to Thracian customs, Orpheus decided to head out and to travel the wide world to accomplish feats for God and the people of Thrace and to earn a bright, well-known name so that he can be a worthy keeper of his people. And when he was in the temple of Dionysus in Pere and stood immersed in fasting and prayer, seeking out God's will and guidance for his upcoming journey, lo and behold, a wondrous vision appeared before him. A white-headed sage was standing in front of him, who said to him, "Orpheus, I am your great-grandfather, Trax, whom you do not know. When I was your age, I headed out to walk the earth with my companions and to accomplish great feats and to earn a worthy name for myself as you yourself intend to do also. However, evil forces instigated the Achaeans to sacrifice me to their gods so that they may bereave us from the holy posterity of our people, that our name not be mentioned ever again among the tribes. But when they had placed me on the altar and had pressed their knife against my throat, a wondrous golden ram suddenly took my place. And when they sacrificed it, they thought that they had put an end to the name tracks. And then the golden ram rose above the sacrificial flames and took me far away from the Achaeans and carried me to many places, after which it left me in Colchis, where the bed of Phocis is. There stood the great temple of my God, who had appeared before me in the image of the golden ram and had rescued me, and there in that temple lies to this day the golden fleece of the ram alongside the ark with my bones. I beseech thee in the name of the God of Thrace, bring my bones back to my birthplace, Pere, in Thrace, and take with you as a reward the golden fleece which my bones are wrapped within the ark. By doing so, you shall return the glory of Thrace and earn yourself a kingly name for all of time. And Orpheus was still in awe of what he had just seen when suddenly a radiant lamb, like it was of gold, faced him and spoke in a human voice, Orpheus, son of the great Orphe, I am the god of your fathers, the sun-giving Isis. Your forefather Orphe rejoiced in my word day and night. Do fulfill the requests of old Thrakes and bring the Arak with his bones back to the temple in Pere. For in the ark also lies three tablets of Orphe, which belong to your paternal home. Okay, sorry, I was just making sure that Justin was on the stream still. Your guide shall be Azon, and he will return to you the throne of your forefathers, which by right belongs to whosoever wields the secrets of the golden runes on the scrolls of lambskin written by the holy keepers of Thrace. I shall be your side throughout your entire journey. I shall be by your side throughout your entire journey, and the spirits of the great holy men of ancient times will accompany you as well, for their hearts will find no peace until all ancient scriptures have been restored and brought to Pere. Arise now, belt yourself, and begin your journey. For your companions, both visible and in the invisible, await you to lead them to eternal and glorious deeds, of which all forthcoming generations will speak. And while Orpheus was still gazing at the vision, he saw a tall white throne and four living creatures, and many old men in front of it. And among them stood the same lamb as is slain from the beginning of the creation of the world, which had seven horns and seven eyes. And it came forth and approached the throne and took a great book from the right hand of he who was sitting in the throne. And when he took the book, the four living creatures, many sages, fell to their knees before the Lamb, while each and everyone was holding a harp and a golden cup, and they began to sing and holy exaltation with the words, "May blessing and honor, glory and sovereignty be unto he who sits on the throne and unto the Lamb forever and ever." And then the vision began to fade, and Orpheus found himself once again standing before the altar in the temple of God Dionysus. Chapter 14. Amazed by what he had seen, young Orpheus requested an audience with the oracle in Perae and told him all about the vision. "Once you find your guide, tell him to come to me, and I shall give him directions for your journey." The oracle briefly replied, and then bid him farewell. Orpheus immediately began asking around for someone with knowledge and experience who could guide him and his companions on a long trip, and promised a large sum of money to such a person, especially if he was named Aeson. Not many days passed, and an Achaean sailor named Iason was brought to him, who said that he was ready for such task if the pay was indeed so handsome. Orpheus was greatly pleased with this, because the Achaean sailors were famous for being very educated, skilled and insightful people when it came to the known world, and they quickly struck up a bargain about the price. The following day, Orpheus sent him to the oracle in Perae, and as he and the oracle had agreed to do, so that he may receive directions for reaching their desired goal, Iason returned to him, having written down everything the oracle had said. "Now, this is an eternal. Now, this is an educated man," Orpheus said to himself. "It seems that he is a literate Hellen. He can write, has understood and written down everything accurately and clearly." Iason's notes read, "The oracle said the following: the destination can be reached only by sailing with an Argo." Note to the reader: Iason is writing corrections on his own paper to what he believes he has heard. As with all the other corrections following correction, Argo, i.e. meaning fast ship, Along the way, you must be aware of the Harappi, King Cass, and Amazon women. And to reach Colchida, or Colchis, you must learn from Finn, who knows the course of Foso, the river faces, best. It is he who gazes upon the gods, who has sealed the images to lead you. And once you reach Iyat, the king of the Colchida, the Colchis, you will have to defeat the bull, the man, and the golden dragon and seek the help of the mighty Medea, the sorceress. Okay, hold on. I'm looking for my place here. All right. I'm also making the font larger so it's easier to read. And I should actually go ahead and share my screen. I don't know if it'll come through, but if it does, at least you'll have that as well. So, yeah. All right. If you find yourself in need, seek advice from Chiron. Correction, Chiron, which Chiron is the centaur from the mythology. That's interesting. If you find yourself in need, seek the advice from Chiron or Chiron, the centaur. This is how you will find the golden fleece of Trax. There I have finished speaking. Jason said to Orpheus, I am sorry about the corrections on my instructions, but the old man was numbering. And I think that a lot of things are not clear to him. Also regarding your vision. Man, I know that he is no longer named Trax. Or I guess he's speaking about the prophet, the vision man. But Phryx, because he became Phrygian, and that he has left Troy with many ships carrying big cargo and settled down in Colchis. I have been to Colchis and I know many things about the way to it. We will need a very firm and fast ship, which I will seek to acquire myself. But I need your word that we will split the gold we find from the treasure equally, so that I may pay for a good crew from my share of the wealth. And after they reached an agreement, Jason swiftly spread the word among the local wealthy merchants that he was setting sail towards Colchis to deliver an entire ship with golden hides from it, and he was looking for offers, with which he quickly amassed everything in need for the entire trip. Soon after, he managed to acquire a decent ship, and when he wrote the name Argo on it, he proudly summoned Orpheus, his companions, and the crew. with he had hired to present it to them. They fasted the whole night through. By Thracian custom, and set sail east of Abadara in the morning. Okay. I'm trying to adjust the font, but I can't find a happy medium. Let me try one more time. Okay, that's much better. They sailed across the Thracian Sea and continued through the Hellespont, sailed across the Propontic Sea, continued through the Bosphorus, reached Samothrace, and then headed north all the way to Mysia. After which they again headed to the southeast along the coast of Bithymia, and then firmly to the east across Pontus. They wandered for a long time following the sea currents and winds, and although Jason claimed to know the way to Colchis, they just could not reach their destination. They asked everywhere about Trax or Frica and about the Golden Fleece, but it seemed that none knew of either. All stared at them in wonder, and those asked seemed worn and burdened by their everyday problems. And troubled people everywhere fighting for the daily ration of bread and to survive until the next day. And were not only incapable of helping them reach their destination, but sought comfort and help from them, Orpheus and Jason. They also came across war and rumors of war in some places, which forced them to work their way round some towers in order to avoid being caught between the warring tribes. They had traveled to nearly every coastal city in Thrace and Hellas, but still could not figure out where the Golden Fleece was. By good fortune, they had much food and water, and also silver coins, so that they were not able to buy more provisions and continue their journey, which had now lasted several months. And although they aimed to sail near the coastline, they sometimes found themselves in rough waters, in open sea, and fierce storms nearly sank their ship several times, but did not, thanks to the good crew which Jason had hired. And when they had finally lost all hope of reaching the coveted Colchis on a bright sunny day amidst calm and quiet waters, Orpheus and his companions entered the estuary of a big river which flowed into the distant east, the Pontific Sea. And when they landed in a suitable dock, they learned that they had reached Colchis because this was the estuary of the river Phasis. All were overcome by indescribable joy, because it seemed that they had finally reached their destination. Once they set foot on the land, they were immediately surrounded by soldiers who asked them of their business there. And when the soldiers heard that they were sent to the king of Colchis, Ait, they laughed because there was no such king in Colchis, and they had never heard of one, not in the time of their fathers, nor in the time of their grandfathers. But once they learned that Orpheus was a son of a priest, and that Jason was a son of a king, they showed the proper honor, respect, and hospitality. And their commander promised to send word of their arrival to Pleisthen, the king of the Colchis. After they spent several days in the inns and taverns and the docks, being taken around everywhere by the soldiers who had accompanied them, they were finally invited to the royal palace, where they were taken to King Cleisthenes by his special guardsmen. The king invited and treated them to a feast as a token of his hospitality, and proceeded to listen very carefully and patiently to the long tables of their journey and about their goal, and in the presence of his nobles. "My honored and highly reputable guests," he finally said, "your determination and bravery for undertaking such a long and perilous trip truly amazes me, and be sure that you have earned my respect and favor. I wish that my people and I could be of help in every way in order to assist you in finding what you seek. But alas, neither my councilmen, who are all wise, nor I have heard of this golden fleece, nor even of a famous traveler named Trax, or even Phrixus, who supposedly brought such a thing here, nor of him living in our lands for that matter. I do not want you to think that my people or I are somehow trying to hide something from you which is here among us, or that we want to rob your people of Thrace and Hellas, for which we have always heard glorious words, and which we highly respect and desire to be good neighbors and to live in peace. And because you have traveled so far to reach us, and because we have many other wonders, even if they are not this golden fleece, please allow my nobles to take you to these places in my kingdom, and be my guests for at least a month, so that you may travel everywhere and taste of everything which is glorious among my people. And also to personally make sure that we are not hiding the golden fleece from you here. And once you are well pleased and have delighted us with your honorable presence, please allow me to fill your ships with all necessary supplies of food and water and clothing, and to send you off with the utmost of gold, of good wishes, to reach your destination and to have the protection of the gods so that you may return home safe and sound. Chapter 15, we're almost at break, but I'll read just a couple of paragraphs and then we'll pick it up on the other side and I'll see if I can locate the chat room. Orpheus, Yazon, and their companions happily accepted, not only because they were extremely exhausted and truly needed a long rest, but because they thought that the golden fleece might still be in Cleisthenes' kingdom, even though he himself might not know about it. Endless nights of fasting, of feasting, with never-ending food and drink, at royal tables began. And young and gorgeous girls not only shared and waited on the company of guests, but also sheltered the most vigorous of them in their arms during the wondrous warm summer nights, in which talk of feats and love went hand in hand. The most enterprising of Argo's crew managed to display their exquisite goods from Hellas and Thrace on the city market. And soon, not only were they able to exchange them for an equal and adequate number of exquisite and unique goods from the craftsmen of Colchis, but began receiving offers and orders involving no small number of gold and silver coin from the city merchants to bring even more of the same goods to Colchis. All right, we'll be right back for second hour.
Join me at Revolution Radio, Studio B, at 11 a.m. on Saturday for free association, when we take a look at philosophy, spirituality, psychology, social issues, and geopolitics. It's every Saturday at 11 a.m. Eastern on Studio B at freedomslips.com.
Transcending time and space, let us take you to the place inside your mind where thoughts divide and mysteries unwind. Join us every Monday evening right here on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com from 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern Time, and you will catch the Fenton Perspective with our great host, Lorian Fenton. Come listen in as she shares her amazing stories from the past to present, along with all of her guest secrets to the future. That's the Fenton Perspective every Monday evening right here from 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern Time, only on Revolution Radio. Oh, and you don't need to expect us. We're already here.
Torture us and bomb us, fire is catching. And if we burn, you burn with us.
Good evening.
Are you awake yet? I hope. We've tried and we've tried for years and years to use passive resistance and loud voices to make a change. That time is over. Your governments around the world have no other goal than to decimate your entire existence at the hands of the bankers and the elites. The war is coming, and it's your choice to decide if you want to be a warrior or a victim. Denial is not a choice anymore. Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, the number one listener supported radio station on the planet, not giving up. Revolution Radio. Thanks for listening while we take that short break here at Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. And now we're going to get back to your host.
Okay, welcome back, everybody. And just so you know, there is no live stream. My son is pretty feeling awful. And so, so God bless him and his family, may he get some rest, and you're just going to have to listen to the archive, which I will. I'll have to download from the TFR Live site so that you can hear it later. But all right, let's continue, and I should be able to maybe even finish up what I do have of the Book of Navi, which the story gets very interesting from here as well. And we see that, you know, what we believe to be a lot of the original, you know, Greek and Roman mythology and the stories that were prized by them, that these stories are actually based on the mythology and the faith and traditions of the Thracian people. And that even Orpheus, which, you know, Orpheus is celebrated in the Greek culture as being this lute player. He was able to play these musical instruments. And the one story is said that he was able to go down into Sheol and to bring out his love, but that he was unsuccessful because at the very last moment that he was supposed to enter and never look back, to go down into the deepest parts of Sheol until he found his bride, and then going out and wandering back to the land of the living, that she would follow him. And we see that in the actual Thracian Chronicles, the Book of Navi, that this was a story of how he had met his wife, who they were not even dating, had not even professed their love to one another, but that she was a priestess in one of the oracle sites which were set up and which revered the Holy Mother, which is again the Holy Spirit, what they call Rhea, R-E-Y-A. And you find even again in the Greek mythology, which the Thracian material predates even the Sumerian, which is said to be, you know, the most ancient. But their culture, the Thracian culture, predates even the Sumerian by 2,000 years. And so very, very ancient. And it is the civilization from which many of the others find their point of origination. Even the ancient Egyptians, the Athenians, the Grecian, the Phoenician, the Scythians, all of these found their start with the Thracian Empire and their connections to one another, beginning with the Thracian peoples. And so that story is, you know, repeated here in the Book of Navi, but told differently. And he actually succeeded in bringing this girl out of Sheol, and that when she was restored to life through his faith in the word, and he described it as such, that nothing was attributed to him, but everything was according to Isis, Dion, which is God, and Isis, Y-I-S-U-S, which is Jesus, and so Yahushua. And so the word of the Lord Christ, the Memra, and also the only begotten Son of the Holy Father and the Holy Mother. And so this book and these teachings restore a lot of what people know little about in regard to the Thracian stories. And so we see how even the ones that we're talking about now, and will be talking about, the Golden Fleece, you know, the Golden Ram, the Lamb of God, all these themes are Christian. It's just that most people don't know about them and have not recognized them as such. But without a doubt, the Thracian peoples were worshippers of the Holy Trinity, and that they revered the Father and the Son, and also the Holy Spirit as the feminine aspect of the Godhead, as is revealed and as these teachings will be included in, you know, to some degree, with the permission that I've received for inclusion, so that you can learn these things. All right, let us continue. All right, talking about the merchants here. And soon, not only were they able to exchange them for an equal adequate number of exquisite and unique goods from the craftsmen of Colchis, but began receiving offers and orders involving no small number of gold and silver coin from the city merchants to bring even more of the same goods to Colchis. Soon, a big part of Argo's crew and Orpheus's companions were so enamored with what had happened to them that they had forgotten why they had actually come to Colchis and what was the initial goal of their trip. At the end of their 30-day stay, Orpheus and Yazon were absolutely stunned to hear that more than half of their men did not intend to go back to their homelands just yet, but wanted to spend more time in Colchis. Some of them, the more well-read and literate ones, said that they liked the splendor of the royal hospitality and had decided to accept Cleisthenes' offer to stay in service to him in his royal retinue. Others had so strongly fallen in love with some of the women who sheltered them in their homes that they had decided to take them as their wives and invited Orpheus to stay for their weddings and to bless their new homes in Colchis, where they would now stay and live forever. A third party had already established a successful business and opened their own street stands in the city markets, becoming partners with the merchants of Colchis, and promised Yazon and Orpheus that they would soon come to Hellas and Thrace for new goods with ships from Colchis, but that they could not return on the Argo because they would lose the greatest gains of their lives if we had managed to amass so much silver and gold coin in less than a month. Imagine what we could do if we worked harder. Your payment, Yazon, does not match even the smallest of what we have already obtained here in Colchis. But the greatest surprise which was delivered to Orpheus was by Yazon himself, who called Orpheus to speak privately right before their setting sail to tell him, "Orpheus, you will not believe this, but I have found Medea, whom the oracle in Piraeus spoke of. She is kin of the Medi. That is why the oracle called her by Medea, although her real name is Aisha. She's a slave here in Kleistenstein's domain, but she is the most beautiful woman I have ever seen. I fell in love with her and love her with all my heart, and she loves me very much as well. I told her everything about the Golden Fleece, and it turns out that she knows about it also. She shared with me that is the daughter of the king of Medea, and assured me that if I liberate her from her slavery and return her to her father's palace, he will thank me by giving me the Golden Fleece. We have journeyed so far. Don't you think that it would be worth it to kidnap her from Kleistenstein's palace and go to her father in Medea? Orpheus gave serious thought to what he had heard. What if this slave woman was willing to promise anything just to escape from her bonds? Was she really a daughter of a king? And has she really seen the Golden Fleece? This had to be carefully investigated. This had to be carefully investigated straight from the source. Yazan introduced her to Orpheus, who wished to speak with her privately. He questioned her about everything regarding the Golden Fleece. Aisha spoke in awe of Medea about the marvelous wonders and treasures the land possessed, and looked at him with her dark, caressing, wet eyes, and carefully peered into his face as if she was hoping to see the impact her words had on him from his expression. Whilst not missing the opportunity to throw back her beautiful locks, to reveal her cleavage underneath her neatly, nearly transparent clothing. Her uncovered thighs were inviting him to stroke them, and she did not even attempt to hide them with her long dress. Orpheus took stock of himself, reestablished his composure, and said, "Tell me more about the Golden Fleece. Tell me of the runes you saw on it. And do you know their meaning?" The girl seemed disturbed for a moment and began to blink with the long eyelashes of her eyelids. "Runes? What do you mean?" "Oh yes, the meaning of the fleece," she said, and turned her eyes to the side quickly, regaining her composure. "Yes, yes, the meaning of the fleece is very important. It is filled with gold and jewelry, pearls, and many different precious stones. What else did you ask?" "Yes, there is so much gold that all of it weighs as much as an entire wagon filled with gold. With all that gold, whoever possesses it will be able to buy anything they please and have the freedom and luxury to live happily for the rest of their lives. If you take me there, I will forever be your faithful beloved, and you will be rich and happy with me and the fleece for the remainder of your days." When she said this, she threw herself on top onto Orpheus his lap and began to passionately hug and kiss him, allowing her almost transparent garment to slip off entirely, revealing all of her beauty, and she was half naked in front of him. "Okay, okay," Orpheus said, and carefully removed her from himself. "Go now. I must think thoroughly to devise a plan for such an escape from Cleisthenes. I shall discuss everything you told me with Yazon, and then I will make my final decision. But he has already decided and has given me his promise. He is just waiting for you to offer your support," Aisha said, covering herself with her garment on her way out of Orpheus's chambers. Later, with Yazon, "I do not think your beloved is really a princess," Orpheus said to Yazon when they met after seeing her. "A real princess would at least know how to read and write and would value those much more than what she could buy with a wagon filled with gold. I know that you love her, and that is why you trust her completely, but I cannot risk the freedom and life of my companions for some woman's intrigues. Who can repay one's services only by fulfilling their lusty desires? I would advise against following her plans. Do not forget why we went on this long and difficult journey in the first place. The oracle never said that the fleece is in Medea. And besides, to go there we would have to go by foot through paths and lands of which we know nothing. Both of us would wind up as slaves in the hands of a merciless master at best. Is it not best, as you yourself have written down, to ask Chiron the centaur? Did you not say that you have indeed heard of him? But Orpheus, how do you expect me to know where Chiron the centaur is? Do you not know that he is but a myth? And may not even exist at all? How do you expect me to take you to him? I have brought you to Medea herself. What more do you want? Yazon was very disappointed from Orpheus's lack of support and stated that he will continue tracking down the Golden Fleece alone with Aisha, because he was sure he was following the oracle's instructions by doing so, and that she, out of all the prophecies so far, was the only prophecy which came true and is pointing in the right direction towards the fleece. They embraced in farewell, and the same night, after saying goodbye to Cleisthenes and his nobles, Orpheus returned to the Argo with a few remaining crew. Orpheus returned to the Argo with a few remaining crew, loyal to his mission. Orpheus didn't even get sleep throughout the entire night. Now, where to, he thought. He unfolded Yazon's notes with the oracle's instructions once again. he read and reread them again and again. Why couldn't he find King Ait? Was he not supposed to rule Colchis? Not some Pleistothines? Was not the fleece supposed to be here in Colchis? What could he do now? Return to Thrace stripped of glory and admit? Could it be possible that the Oracle's words mean something different? For example, Ait, a correction made by Yezon, because the Oracle had been mumbling. But the Oracle had said Eat, and in the Thracian dialect of old, which the priest spoke in Pere, Eat meant the end, the endmost or the last. What if the king of Colchis was actually the endmost, the last king he had to reach to find out where the fleece was? Well, yes, but here he is, and he still does not know where the fleece is. What does it say next? Hold on 1 second. The note read, and once you reach Ait. Hold on 1 second, everybody. And once you reach Ait, the king of Colchis, you will have to defeat the bull, the man, and the golden dragon, and seek the help of the mighty Matia, correction, Madia, the sorceress. If you find yourself in need, seek advice from Chiron, the centaur. This is how you will find the golden fleece of Thrakes. There I have spoken. It did not even say a thing about some Madea, because that was a correction made by Yezon, but about Matia. Nor did it say a thing about Chiron the centaur, but that the name Chiron was actually pointed out. Obviously, Yezon had been following a false way and conjured up a path in which he had deceptively been leading all of them because of his own self-reliant and wayward corrections. Why did Orpheus see this just now? Why did he overtrust so blindly the Helen and his overpraised knowledge and supposed extensive experience? Because of him, he had lost more than half of his companions, almost the entire ship's crew, and a whole year in wandering journeys in unknown lands, which had brought him nowhere. Perhaps if he was to find this Chiron, of whom the Oracle spoke of, and seek advice from him, then maybe none of this would have been entirely for naught. Chapter 16. In the morning, Orpheus got off the ship and went to the marketplace with several of his companions. They spent the entire day there asking salesmen, merchants, and passerbyers if any of them had heard of a man named Chiron. It was at sunset when suddenly they came across a group of sailors led by a man called Zemehi from a land called Hemi, where are the greatest wonders of the world are the pyramids. Hyrum, you say? Asks me, with a smile on his face. Why Hyrum? Why Hyrum means the priest of the god's son in On. Of course we know this, for we are from there. And sending Sel back to On in Heliopolis the day after tomorrow. I can even take you to see him in person if you wish, because I have to personally deliver some goods he ordered. After 2 days, the Argo set sail from Colchis, following the Egyptian Simehe's fleet. And 4 weeks later, Orpheus and his companions were standing before the face of the priest of On in Heliopolis, who was named Sa-Ozir. Son of Orphe, we have been waiting for you to come for a long time, because it was prophesied that your path come through On. You are looking for the secret book of Taiguiti, the book of the God Word, and you have traveled. You are looking for the secret book of Taiguiti, the book of the God Word, and you have traveled the entire world to find it, but it was not where you sought it. However, we know of its whereabouts, for it is located where your great father, Orphe, was born, where the first Adamu was, and where the tree of the knowledge of Tot and Re is. It is guarded by the ancient serpent, who attacks all who reach towards it, so that they might not find salvation. For there upon it lies the eternal golden fleece of the God Word, he who sacrificed himself from the world's creation, so that all who seek and find it may gain not only primordial divine knowledge and great wisdom, but eternal life within him. He is the Lamb of God, he who bears the sins of the world, and comes forth to the world nailed to a piece of wood, for his fleece is laid upon the eternal tree, so that all may eat from its fruit, namely the fruit from the tree of life, and when eating from it, receive healing from within its leaves, which are healing for the people. You are most welcome to learn with us, as our fathers once learned with your holy fathers, Orphe, O son of the great temple of God, Orphe. For every journey towards the truth initially begins in spirit, and primarily there one must defeat the bull, the man, and the serpent, so that the gates toward the tree of the knowledge and life may open. If you do not manage to defeat the Harepi and the Amazons during your flight in the divine spirit. If you do not manage to defeat the Harepi and the Amazons during your flight in the divine spirit, you shall not overpower them in sailing as well. regardless of how many years you wander across the world. But for you to defeat them, for you to be victorious and overcome everything, you need at least a little bit of mata'u, mata'u'a. Namely, you must come to know the Maiden of Power. Namely, you must come to know the Maiden of Power, unto whom the Divine Spirit rests upon, whose sacred name is Ma-Re-Ya. Here among us, you will learn of the words of power and understand what Matawu, the powerful speech, really means, so that you will not be stricken like your friend when he followed the slave girl, Medea. Stay with us in the Temple of On until your training is complete, as it has been promised about you in the order for us to do all which is right by the covenant of the great Orphe. For we are all servants to the covenant. And after uttering these words of greeting, the priest of On welcomed Orpheus in the Temple of On, where he lived and studied the secrets of Egypt for 3 whole years, until the time came for him to receive his priestly scepter and journey back to his homeland of Thrace, where, according to the priests of On, the scrolls of Orphe, which were covered with the golden runes of the Lamb of God, he who comes into the world, were located. When Orpheus returned to the holy city of Perae, he immediately went to see the oracle of Dionysus, who gave him the directions for his journey and told him all about his experiences in all the lands he ventured in. He also told him of his training in the Temple of On and about the Book of Names of the Speech of Matau, in which all priests and ancient forces speak. The oracle asked him in return, with his kind-hearted sweetness. The oracle asked him in return with his kind-hearted sweetness. And what have you learned after all of this, my son? Orpheus gave the following answer. I learned that you were right when you warned us to watch out for the Hierapi, because in the ancient speech of creation, this means to watch out for eating and wine drinking. And sadly, many of my companions and crew failed to do so and abandoned me in Colchis. I also learned that you were right when you warned us about the Amazon women too, which in the same ancient tongue means possessive women, fornicatrices, because women exactly of that sort possessed others of my comrades and made them abandon our mission, as did King Cass, namely, the power of money. Blinded many of my remaining comrades, and they too abandoned me for the sake of money making, which foreign lands, Furthermore, I learned that the king which I had reached in Colchis was not Ait, but Eat, meaning the final king, or king of the final farthest land, which I had to reach, and this saved me from being misled by my guide Yazon and a slave girl into going further to the distant Medea. But I would never have found all of this out if it were not for my happy run in with the merchant Samihi, for only he alone knew who Hyron, the person of whom you said I was to seek advice from, if I ever found myself in need, was. If it were not for Samihi, I would not have met Hyron, the priest of On and Heliopolis. And even then, I would not have been able to understand the meaning of a single one of the words you had spoken. Meaning of a single one of the words you had spoken to me. It was only after my training with him that I was able to see that of the entire group, only I was able to overcome the will of the flesh embodied in the bull, which had thwarted many of my companions, and to overcome the weak, false human interpretations and arbitrary understandings which stirred a man like Yezon, and preventing him still from understanding your prophetic directions, despise of his vast knowledge and understanding and intellectual abilities, in that I have been safeguarded from lust for gold, for pleasures and success, which hide within the lures of the wicked snake, which is the enemy of all followers of the true path of God. Just a few more paragraphs. I'm not going to complete the book, but at least I should be able to complete this aspect of the story. As you can see, I have learned a great deal of things, but there is one thing I have not been able to understand and felt to do so even to this very moment. And so let me ask thee, wisest of the wise, why, tell me, why did you have to speak to my guide, Yazon, in so many foreign to him riddles, so that I had to sail across a multitude of seas and wander around a multitude of lands and lose many days, mouths, and even years of my life, months, and even years of my life, trying to reach the realization of such simple things, which you could have told me straight away with ordinary, clear speech. Oh, my dear boy, were my words actually meant for Yazon? Was it not God who showed himself in the image of the Lamb of God in your vision and personally told you that your guide must be Yazon and that he will not, and that he will return the throne of your forefathers to you? You actually thought an Achaean named Yazon possessed the power to return the throne of your forefathers to you? Why did you follow a Hellen to lead you in the path towards the holy secrets of God? When have the Achaeans and the Danians understood something sacred in order for them to be your guide towards it? Can a Hellen really be mediator between you and the secret things and the secrets of the divine ancient speech of Thrace? Were you rather not supposed to teach and enlighten him instead of him you? Never follow the Hellenes into anything, because all of their paths are led by the lust of women's flesh and gold and power and the perfidiousness and the perfidiousness of the snake has entangled them in all of this like in an unnavigable labyrinth. But you were supposed to follow Azon, namely your bright inner self, who is in the hand of your god, the god of Orphe, and the god of your fathers, the god of Thrace. The uttered words of prophecy were for your bright self, and if you had followed the beating in your ancient father tongue, you have done a lot better from the very start. For every sacred path and every sacred mission initially begins in spirit and not on some sailor ship, regardless of how educated and erudite he may be. For the wisdom and philosophy of man is sluggishness of act and foolishness. Philosophy to God. There, it took you this much time to understand those which you now call simple things. But is finding oneself a simple thing? And does time spent looking for God's wisdom amount to time lost? And how can you call your wanderings in foreign lands pointless, as if the experience gained from them means nothing? All right, we're going to stop there. At least I did get to the point of the story, even though there were a lot of translations and overlaps that were a little bit confusing. And for that, I apologize. And again, for those that weren't able to join in the active chat, it will restore it with Gary Wayne tomorrow night. I will be interviewing him on TFR. Good night, all. Be blessed. Shalom.
Junkie, I won't say a goddamn word. Why? They won't understand. They won't understand why we do it. They won't understand it's about the men next to you. And that's it. That's all it is.
Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. Number one listener supported radio, the printing press for freedom at a time when freedom is needed the most.
This is Thomas, a.k.a. a Mad Painter. I'd like you to join me Monday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time for Open Canvas. Don't forget to bring an open mind.
Yes, folks, that's right. Bring an open mind to an open canvas. Again, that is Monday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern. UFOs, government corruption.